It is our great pleasure to welcome all of the assembled wonderful personalities to this very auspicious event in the National Sports Club of India. Especially offer our gratitude to the trustees, managers, and members of this very generous institution for allowing us to be here this evening. In spiritual terms, the word sport is equivalent to lila, or pastimes. Krishna's sports are his lilas. Wherever the devotees are gathered together to hear and chant the glories of the Lord is performing his lila in that place. So we are putting a spiritual dimension to the word, to the National Sports Club of India this evening. It is a very charming atmosphere. The sky, the trees, across the street is the ocean. Although we're in the middle of Bombay, of course there are some disturbances. But although in Bombay, to be in such a natural setting, in the association of pious and noble people, is a very wonderful opportunity. We could learn so much from nature. Krishna explains in Gita, "For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for him I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me." Lord Kapila Dev tells Devahuti that the essence of all knowledge, of all scriptures, is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. How to do this? A sober and wise person is thoughtful, is eager to enrich him or herself in every circumstance of life. That is a great virtue. Because the gravitational forces of this nature is to push everyone down. What goes up must come down. That's the nature of the material world. Everything is under these gravitational forces pushing down. Not only in a physical level, but also emotionally and spiritually. The three modes of material nature, gunas, are compared to ropes. They are specially designed by material nature to keep us bound and to drag us down from our original happy spiritual position. But a devotee of the Lord who is thoughtful and wise tries to see in every situation what God is trying to tell us. Therefore, it is said in the Shastras that we should not see with our eyes, we should see with our ears. Because the truth is understood by hearing. What we experience through our vision is relative, incomplete, and illusory. So the Holy Scriptures teach us how everything we see, wherever we are, in every experience that comes before us in life, we could learn a lesson that brings us closer to God. That is wisdom. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a nice description given by Lord Krishna to Uddhava. He describes how the king of the Yadu dynasty was on an excursion, and he happened to come upon a very extraordinary personality. This person was at the very essence of his youth. He was young, very handsome, beautifully built body, very wise and intelligent. But yet, he seemed to be completely indifferent to the material attractions and attachments of this world. Now that's very difficult. Youth is a very turbulent time in people's lives, because that is when the senses are most on fire. The king inquired from him, how is he in such a transcendental position? This material world is compared to a blazing forest fire. And the flames of this fire are lust and greed. And they burn so hot within the heart and all around us. The senses and the mind are sitting places for this kama and lobha. And all living beings are being consumed by the forest fire of material existence. Samsara dava nala didaloka. We see even in our own practical contemporary news, even very, very big people, heads of corporations, heads of countries, are victimized and degraded due to the powerful flames of lust and greed. So how is it, the king is asking, that you seem to be completely transcendental, equal to all living beings, and peaceful in your own heart? Can you explain to me how you have attained this position? So this young man, who is an avadut, explained how he traveled through the world and accepted 24 gurus. And he explained what he learned from each of his gurus. This wonderful narration of Lord Krishna teaches us what we can reflect upon by seeing the common phenomena that comes before us every single day. His first guru is the earth. Haribo. How often do you see the earth? You see the earth all day, every day. Yes, it means the ground. Everything's situated on the earth. So you're always seeing the earth. But what do you think about when you see the earth? He's telling us what we could learn, what we can contemplate and meditate every time we see the earth. The qualities of a saintly person. The qualities we should try to develop and share with others. The earth is very tolerant. However much abuse the earth undergoes, the earth continues to give everything to everyone. He explained, what I learned from the earth is anyone that causes us problems, whether it's dishonor or physical affliction, or whether we're cheated or whether we're blasphemed, so many people can do so many things to us. He said, I have learned from the earth to see that whoever has come to do harm to me is being controlled by the higher power of God to do this for me, to me for my purification. Not to blame the person. By my own activities, by my own karma, this person is being controlled to inflict that karma upon me. So therefore, who do I have to blame? Human nature is we always want to escape the opportunity to make spiritual progress by blaming situations on others. It's actually just an escape mechanism of the ego. Because if we see that this person is simply helplessly being controlled by my own previous deeds to do this to me, then we become contemplative, reflective, to improve ourselves, to take shelter in a situation like that, rather than just blaming everyone but ourselves. What are people doing to the earth today? Drilling oil. How do you think that feels to Mother Earth? Just drills, just going deeper, 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 all over the world, just drilling and drilling and plundering. Oil is like the blood of the earth. Yes? Just draining the oil. For what? People are motivated by greed. People are fighting wars, killing, cheating over oil. Yes? Sita is the goddess of fortune. Bhumi Devi is also consort of the Lord. Everything that the earth provides is meant for the well-being of all living beings in the service of God. So to live in harmony with nature is a spiritual concept. It's not simply trying to keep the balance of ecology for materialistic purposes. That is a superficial understanding of natural life. But on a deeper and more real level, we must understand that the earth is offering everything she has. She's the mother, Mother Earth. Aham Bija Pratapita. She's offering everything in the service of the Father. And if we use everything in harmony with her wish, that is dharma. Therefore, Krishna tells in Gita, yat karoshi yat ashnashi yat tuhoshi tatasya yat tapasya sikondya thakuru shumadarpanam. That whatever we have, whatever we do, whatever we eat, it should all be done as an offering to the Supreme. Some people interpret that Bhagavad Gita means work is worship. Just do your work, do not harm anyone, and that is Gita. But Krishna was telling Arjuna to harm a lot of people. But he was Kshatriya. He was actually doing it to protect people and an overall view for the welfare of all. Yagyaratar kamanon yatra lokomam karma bandana taratam karma konteya mukta sangaparas. Krishna tells in the third chapter of Gita very clearly that work done as sacrifice, as an offering of love to the Supreme Lord must be done. That is worship. Any other type of work is simply a cause of karma bandhana, karmic bondage. Even pious activity, you are bound by the rope of sattva-guna, unless it is done in harmony with the will of the Lord, in devotion, in love for the Lord. Now from that sattva-guna, if we perform pious activities in God consciousness, then we transcend the modes of material nature. And that is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. So the earth, people are polluting her. In so many ways, they're cutting down mass plush forests. For what? Many of the biggest, greatest rainforests in the world, in Brazil, are totally cut down so that they could make pastures, so that cows could eat grass, and 100% every single one of those cows are being fed to be slaughtered. Mother Earth, what she tolerates? For greed and lust, for violence, her forests are being cut down. And her very soils are being soaked with blood of innocent animals, soaked with the blood of savage warriors fighting over her property. The earth belongs to no one but God. According to Gita, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, man divides up the earth and says, this is mine. And now what you think is yours will become mine. Yes? We have seen there was the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, the British Empire. So many empires. There was the German Empire. They conquer more and more and more and more. The Mughal Empire. But they can't keep what they have because ultimately the earth is the property of God. And man makes his boundaries and his territories and says, this is mine. Our Guru Maharaj went to one country and they didn't allow him in because he was dressed like a swami. So he remarked, he said, immigration officers, they're like watchdogs. Ruff, 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 ruff. You cannot come in. Of course, for the protection of people, these things have to be done. Nationalism is a necessity in the world today. But how does Mother Earth feel about this? She's offering her entire everything to God. It's the property of God, and we're calling it our own. So yes, so much plundering. And yet Mother Earth is so tolerant that she's still providing everything for everyone that is living all over the world. And then the Avadhuta explain the quality of the tree. Actually, Krishna also glorified trees. After stealing Gopi's clothes, he was walking deep into the forest of Vrindavan, and he was under the shade of trees. So he called to his gopas, O Arjuna, O Subal, Stoka Krishna, Sri Dama, O Jaswi, O Vasudam, O Ujvala, just see how these trees are living for the welfare of other living beings. They're willing, a tree is willing to stand in the wind while being exposed to the wind, the rain, the heat, and all other elements. It's giving shelter to us, shades us from the heat, gives us protection from the wind, like an umbrella from the rain. In this way, Krishna explains the perfection of life is to tolerate difficulties for the welfare of others. These are the words of Krishna. And the Avadhut repeated the same thing. This is what I learned from the trees. How to tolerate any type of inconvenience for the welfare of others. To give shelter to others. Now the question is, what is welfare for others? There is physical, there is emotional, and there is ultimately spiritual welfare. Bharata bhumite hoila manusya janmachar janma sarataka karakara para upakar. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, it is the duty of everyone who has the very fortunate birth of being born in India to accept the great gift of the culture and spiritual heritage of the forefathers and mothers of this great land and do the greatest welfare for the world by distributing it. Now note, the Lord Himself is explaining what an incredible fortune it is to take birth in India. Of course, there are so many hundreds and thousands and millions of people from India who are trying to go to some other land, Europe, America, Australia, South Africa, to get more money. Yes? To get citizenship, green cards. And that is considered a great fortune, to have a green card in America and become a citizen. Harivo. But that's not according to the Lord's version. The Lord's version is, it's most auspicious to take birth in this land. Actually, there was a PhD author of religion. He was a Chinese man. And he was describing all the religions of the world. And in the preface of his book, he wrote that if you want to understand religion, you have to go and live in India for some time. Haribo. Although, yes, in Bombay, things are becoming very westernized and materialistic. Still, the substance of natural dharma and spirituality is so much present within people's hearts, within the lives of the people of India. Such great avatars. Lord Ramchandra appeared in Ayodhya. Krishna appeared in Mathura, Vrindavan. So many great, great acharyas. Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this great land. The Vedic literatures, which are like the encyclopedia of spiritual knowledge for the world. Just one of the Vedic literatures, Bhagavad Gita, which is just 700 verses out of the 100,000 verses of Mahabharata. And Mahabharata is just one literature. There's the Rig Veda, the Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda, the Atharva Veda. There's the Upanishads, 108 Upanishads, and then there are so many other corollary Upanishads. There's 18 Mahapuranas, and then there are so many other Puranas. There's the Itihastas, Vedanta Sutra. So much vast Vedic literature explaining spiritual perspective of every aspect of life. And just 700 verses of one of the Vedic literatures, Bhagavad Gita, one of the greatest scholars in all of Western history. Ralph Waldo Emerson. He exclaimed after reading Bhagavad Gita that all the literatures of the entire Western world do not tell us as much as what we can find in Sri Bhagavad Gita. The whole vast treasure of literatures of the West seem puny and trivial in comparison to the great spiritual empire that speaks to us through Bhagavad Gita. That is the great treasure of this land. Therefore, to actually take those benefits into our own lives by understanding what is this great gift and treasure of Bhagavad Gita. Tadviti pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. We can't really understand Gita as it is unless we follow the path that Krishna teaches. We must accept spiritual master who knows the Gita according to parampara of great teachers. The essence of Gita is to always remember Krishna in all circumstances of in life. The Vedas declare, Om apavitra apavitro va sarvavastam katopi va yasmarit pundarikaksam sabhayabhyantara suchi. Whether we're pure or impure is really irrelevant. If we simply remember the all-pure, supreme, lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, we become purified within and without. Just like our Gurudev gave example, you may be clean or you may be dirty, but if you're in the shower and clean water is falling on you, it's just a matter of time till you're perfectly clean. So similarly, simply by remembering the Lord, we become cleansed, we become purified. And how to always remember the Lord? It is so simple. Kali kale namarupe Krishna avatar. Krishna has descended within the name. We can always think of Krishna. We can always be in the presence of Krishna. We can always be purified by chanting the holy names with sincerity. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. That in fact is the essence of Gita. Satatam kirtayanto mam yajantita. Krishna tells, always chant my names and glories. Always remember me, man mana bhavamad bhakto. Therefore, it is described in Brihad Naradiya Purana, Haranam, 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 Eva Kevalam Kalo, Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. That in this age of Kali Yuga, liberation is so simple. Just chant the holy names of Lord Hari, purify your heart. And then what do we do with that purification? What do we do with that knowledge? We live for the welfare of others. That is our duty as human beings. It is the perfection of life. That is what we learn from every tree that we see on the road. Why not reflect in this way and become enriched? Every time we see the earth, we learn how to tolerate difficulties for the welfare of others. Every time we see a tree, how to enrich ourselves with spiritual knowledge and realization and give shelter to others, live for the welfare of others. We're always under the sky, the wind, because we're close to the ocean, we have a nice ocean breeze. In the summer, we enjoy that ocean breeze. In the winter, sometimes we do not like that ocean breeze. But what can we learn from the breeze? This is explained so nicely in Srimad Bhagavatam. That the wind, although it's traveling to so many places, and it's put in so many different circumstances, the wind itself is never affected. Sometimes the wind blows through a beautiful forest with sweet, fragrant flowers, and it carries that aroma that gives us such pleasure. But that same wind goes along the Dadar railway tracks in that area where people are performing their natural obligations. And the wind mixes with the stool and the urine of so many people. Yes? And then it's obnoxious, it's abominable for us. But actually, for the wind, although it's in these circumstances, it's factually completely unaffected. In the same way, he said, the spirit soul, which is transcendental to the body and the dualities of material nature, is really unaffected by all the situations around us. When the false ego identifies with these circumstances, we're very, very seriously affected by our surroundings. The soul is traveling from infancy to babyhood to youth to old age, yes? And then to death. Death is inevitable. And what happens at death? According to our desires and our actions, we must take another birth. And in that birth, there's childhood, youth, old age, and death. Then another birth, childhood, youth, old age, and death. We've gone through so much. But the soul, like the wind, is passing through all these various phases of life, but is actually not affected. The soul is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So what do we learn from the breeze? That actual happiness, actual life, is when we realize the nature of the soul, which is transcendent. And to remain faithful to the service of the Lord, faithful to morality and dharma in all circumstances. That is human integrity. Integrity is one of the rarest things to be found in this age of Kali. Integrity means to understand what is right, not according to our own speculations or the speculations of others, but according to truth, according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, according to God, what is right. We understand and we live by that. Integrity means even if you have so much to lose, you will not compromise living by what's right. And that's the test. And everyone will be tested. in various ways. Are we willing to sell our souls to illusion? Lord Jesus Christ in Bible, he was tempted by Satan at the very beginning of his preaching career. He was brought to a top of a mountain, and the devil just offered him incredible amounts of land, incredible amounts of fortune, incredible amounts of opulences. He said, just serve me. And he said, get away out of my life. That was his temptation. He passed the test. So similarly, Maya Devi is always going to test us. And integrity means whatever happens, we maintain our moral, ethical, and spiritual principles. Even if it means you lose a lot of money that could be made. It's easy to take a bribe. Yes? It's easy to cheat. One of the biggest money-making industries in the world is intoxicating drugs. Heroin. Opium. Cocaine. It's huge. Multi-billion-dollar industry. Just do two-hour deal. Just transport this cocaine from here to here and you will make $10 million. Who could resist that? A person with integrity. We should not sell our souls to Maya. Integrity is very, very sacred. People will love you and respect you if you're willing to make sacrifices to be what God wants you to be and do the right thing. In the society around us, there's so much social pressures. So much social pressures for all ages, especially youth. If you want to be popular, if you want to be fashionable, so many corrupt things have to be done. So many materialistic things have to be done. So many egoistic ways. But integrity means get out, Satan. Get out, Maya. I have no room in my life for you. My purpose is to please God, to live by the highest moral, ethical, and spiritual principles. That we could learn from the sky and the wind. Yes, the wind. We may be put through so many various circumstances in life, but we should be fixed in our morality and in our spiritual convictions. And a person who is like that, people can put their trust and faith in. People can find shelter in a person who has integrity. That is the greatest need in the world today. And we see the moon. What do we learn when we see the moon? So many nice things. Krishna Chandra, Ram Chandra, Vrindavan Chandra. Krishna is compared to the moon. Ram is compared to the moon. So beautiful. They have moon-like faces. Nityananda Prabhu's lotus feet are like tens and millions of moons, giving refreshing, cooling rays that just give light and nourish us. But the Avadhuta explains another thing that the moon teaches us. The moon is always waxing and waning. Sometimes it's Amavasya, where you don't even see the moon. And then there's the quarter moon, half moon, Purnima, full moon. Yes, the calendar, the Eastern calendar, is based on the waxing and waning of the moon. Ekadasi, Dvadasi, Trayodasi, Chaturdasi, yes, Purnima. But actually the moon is the same, it's only appearing different. Just like the spirit soul. The spirit soul is part and parcel of Krishna. The nature of the soul is to love Krishna. But the soul appears to be young, old, black, white, man, woman, rich, poor. And within our life, there's so many changes that are taking place, so many circumstances that are taking place. The soul remains the same. The moon never changes. It's only the external perceptions of the moon that change. Similarly, as we were describing before, a devotee who has conviction, a dignified human being who has integrity through all the waxings and wanings of life will remain fixed in truth. That is what we can thoughtfully contemplate whenever we see the moon. The ocean, with its waves. Waves are like time. Everything is in flux. Everything is transient. Everything is changing in this world. So yes, to actually be wise means to be open and receptive, to improve ourselves, to enrich ourselves and come closer to God through all of our experiences in life. In such a beautiful atmosphere tonight, there's the wind, there's the moon, there's the trees, the earth, and most of all, so many thousands of wonderful personalities who have come together. We could be sitting home watching televisions. We could be going to cinemas and seeing some fantasy. We could be doing so many things. We could be reading newspapers or talking about current events. But we've come here tonight to enrich our lives by remembering God. So yes, human life is so precious. It is so rare. We should not take anything for granted. One of the greatest tragedies of human nature is we do not really appreciate something or someone until they're gone. Is that not true? If we love someone, if they're taken from us through death, it's natural that there's so many regrets. Why didn't I reciprocate? Why didn't I appreciate? Why didn't I express my appreciation? It's almost impossible to really grasp the reality of what we have until it's gone. That seems to be the nature of this world. Human life is such a benediction. Durlabha manava janma lobhya samsare. So rare There's 8,400,000 species of life. There may be a billion people in India at this time. But how many microbes and insects and fish and reptiles and other species? Even the billion people is a vast minority. Yes? Human life is so rare. It's so precious. Why? Because of the 8,400,000 species of life, it is only the human life that we can atato brahma jigyasa, inquire into what is the truth. Who am I? Where am I going? Where am I coming from? Who is God? What is my relationship? Why is there suffering? The birds, the beasts, the fish, the insects, the reptiles, the trees and the plants, they cannot ask these questions. Therefore, they cannot pursue the solutions to the problems of life. They simply exist, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Human life is not meant simply to enjoy and suffer like the animals. Nayam deho deha bhajam na loke. Rishab have said, sense gratification and reactions of sufferings, they're available to dogs and hawks. Tapodivyam putra yinasatvam. Human life is meant to understand the higher values of truth. Human life is meant for tapasya. Tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam. Now people do not like to hear the word tapasya, because their lives are molded to try to be comfortable. We like comforts. We like relaxation. We like enjoyment. This word tapasya, it's something for people of another age. But what is the actual meaning of tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam? Tapasya is not something painful. Tapasya is something wonderful. Krishna explains in Gita, what tastes like nectar in the beginning will taste like poison in the end, and what tastes like poison at the beginning will taste like nectar in the end. To send your child to school is tapasya. Children do not like school. There may be some rare exceptions, but generally, they like to play. They'd rather come to the National Sports Club of India and play rather than study mathematics, Marathi, Hindi, English, geography. But parents do not say to their children, what feels good, do it, my child. What feels good, do it. Play. Just go on and play. Because they know the future tastes like nectar at the beginning, but it will be poison in the future. So to do the right thing is tapasya. Sacrifice. But Krishna is so kind. Yagyai sankirtana prayaya janti hishumedushaha. To perform tapasya means just to do what is favorable for the enlightenment of the soul and to not do what is unfavorable. And what is the most favorable thing? To perform sacrifice. And in this age, there is only one real recommended sacrifice. And that's the chanting of the holy names. And it's blissful. It's happy. After I end this talk, then we will see how happy this tapasya actually is. Lord Chaitanya came to give through the chanting of the holy name the ultimate perfection of life. How long can we sit in silent meditation? It's difficult. How long can we remain in a yoga asana? It's very difficult. How long can we fast or live a celibate life in a cave in the forest of the Himalayan jungles? Not many of us can do that. But even a small child can experience great happiness dancing and singing the Lord's holy names. And to live a moral, pious life of servitude toward others. That's all that's required. Just purify your heart by chanting the name of the Lord. Understand you're the eternal servant of the Lord. And serve the Lord by living for the welfare of others. And the eternal joy of the heart awakens. That is wealth. Real wealth is happiness. Not just what kind of clothes you wear or what kind of building you live in or what kind of title comes after your name or how much power and control you have over other people's lives. That's not real wealth. Wealth is happiness because that's what everyone's looking for. Anandam Buddhivardhanam Pratipatam Punamritasvadhanam. The chanting of the holy names of the Lord awakens that happiness within our heart. The happiness that we're all looking for, the happiness of eternal love for the Lord and for every living being. Krishna is all attractive. The name of Krishna attracts the complete love of the heart and brings that loving propensity to its ultimate fulfillment in Krishna. And to share that love, that all-attractive love for Krishna with others, that is the most blissful, wonderful, dynamic activity of a human being. So how precious is this benediction that we're all being given to understand its value is essential. Otherwise, if we do not understand the value of something, it will be taken away from us. It will be neglected and it will be lost. So in this wonderful assembly of wonderful people, we are feeling so very, very fortunate tonight. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he would sometimes tell us that he was one man from India who took this great treasure of Bhagavad Gita and shared it with the world and transformed millions and millions and millions of people's lives. People who were lost. People whose lives had such superficial meaning, actually meaningless. No eternal substance. People who were living according to so many sinful, illusory activities that they were on the road to such terrible karmic sufferings. And he gave them the ultimate fulfillment of the heart, the means by which to love Krishna, the all-attractive source of everything that exists, the all-attractive object of everyone's love, the supreme beauty, knowledge, strength, wealth, fame and renunciation. Krishna possesses all opulences in full. He is the shelter of everyone's love. That is what Prabhupada gave us. And we have come together tonight to celebrate that great gift. I thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. At this time we will have Sankirtan, the chanting of the holy names. As has been described, this Sankirtan is so simple, but so powerful. Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shaktish. The absolute truth has invested all of his powers within the name. What is the power of God? Inconceivable, unlimited, all-pervading. And all those powers are invested within the name of the Lord. Daiviheshu gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya mam evam ye prapadyante mayam etatarantaram. Material nature is very difficult to overcome, but Krishna says one who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond it. And how to surrender to Krishna? To take shelter of the name of Krishna. It has the power to free us from the shackles of lust and greed, envy and pride, anger and illusion. It has the power to liberate us from this vast burning forest fire of material existence and bring us to the eternal forest of Vrindavan. The transcendental place of the Lord's eternal sports is Leela. Krishna's Goloka Sports Club. In that beautiful forest of Tulsi, where Sri Krishna, in the background of the beautiful, in the background is Jamuna, Govardhan, Kadamba trees, beautiful peacocks, gopas, gopis, the most loving, amorous affairs of spiritual joy. The holy name will transport us to that state of consciousness. That is the power of Harinam. So as I am chanting, please everyone fold your hands in this way. Everyone. And as you respond to my chanting, please raise your arms very high. Everyone, please. When we fold our hands, we are very humbly welcoming Krishna in the form of his name through our ears into our hearts with great attention. And when we raise our arms, we are expressing our will to offer our body, mind, words, life in the glory of God, Krishna. Everyone, raise your arms. And we will also teach you how to dance Who would like to be tonight's dance teacher? Sudama Prabhu. But try to control yourself and teach the conservative method. Right foot in front of left foot and left foot in front of right foot. This is Lord Chaitanya's method of dancing. But you better get off stage before you become spontaneous. No, you stay. This will be very nice. So everyone, please raise your arms. I thank you very much.